Looking to earn a business degree that fits your busy life? UNC Greensboro's Bryant School of Business and Economics offers flexible, fully online programs with courses as short as 7 weeks. Get the same high-quality education as you would on campus with the convenience and affordability of online learning. Explore a variety of in-demand programs. Don't wait. Apply now to start this fall. Visit bryant.uncg.edu to apply today.
It is a Friday night here on the Infinity Sports Network. You got your boy Jody Mack filling in for JR Sport Brief. And yes, Major League Baseball, the clock is ticking. The trade deadline is now just 6 days away. We did have some action today. Not massive, but some action. And we'll talk about it with my next guest. I've had him on plenty on during the year. Does a great job covering the sport for FoxSports.com. Rowan Cabinet from the West Coast joins me on the Infinity Sports Network. Row, Jody Mack here. How you been, bud?
I'm good, man. It's busy times. How are you?
Very good, except, yes, I hope it gets even busier going forward. Up until, like, the last 24 hours, even less than that, we had had one major trade, the Devers deal, which was now more than a month ago, and we got to the week-out mark, and not much had been done. Couple deals over yesterday, last night, into today. I would still say Josh Naylor, the biggest one so far. Some might say Ryan McMahon. But let's deal with Naylor first because that trade came down first. To the Mariners, who knows that they needed to upgrade their bats. Naylor will certainly do that at first base for them. But they are still being rumored to be the main pursuer of Eugenio Suarez, which the Mariners would also like to get from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Naylor first. How big an addition for Seattle?
It's a big addition. And you know, I don't know that Naylor is going to be the difference single-handedly in terms of how far this Seattle team goes, but it's no question they absolutely had to upgrade at least one of the two corner infield spots, and you mentioned them still being in on Suarez. To be able to get the Naylor thing done with, and this goes for both of these teams, because I think as much as Seattle, you know, getting that figured out at first base was a huge thing, it was also really interesting that the D-backs decided, hey, they're letting everybody know now, like, our guys are up for sale. Now, how far does that fire sale go? I don't know, but that's the team to me that held the keys to this deadline. What were they going to do? I think the best thing that could have happened for the rest of the 29 other teams is that the Astros swept the Diamondbacks to start the week, and I think that let Arizona know, hey, this is kind of the direction I think we have to go. You look at the market right now in terms of just really exciting names. They stood out, yes, because they have talented players that could go, but also because those talented players are rentals. There's just not a ton of real difference-making rental pieces just for this year. And the fact that they had Naylor, they have Suarez, they have Gallen, they have Kelly, those are all difference-making pieces that teams, because those guys are all going to be up here soon, probably don't have to spend as much to go get and could really make a difference to the stretch run. So I said a lot about the D-backs, but Seattle, yeah, to get Naylor, like they just had no power from first base or third base. They only had 16 home runs this year from their first baseman. 10 of those came from Rowdy Tellez, who no longer plays for the team. He was released in June, I believe. So they needed to upgrade with some power. Naylor hasn't been quite the home run guy that he was last year in Cleveland, but still getting on base at a really high clip. This is a team that has struggled with strikeouts a lot. Naylor puts the ball in play, has a high batting average, has a high on base. I think it's a big add for them. And, yeah, that's interesting. You put him in the middle of a lineup that has, you know, J-Rod and Randy and obviously Cal Raleigh doing what he's doing. That's a real big add. And if they can also upgrade at third base, all of a sudden, I don't know if I'd say they're the favorites with the lead that the Astros have built, but that's a really competitive team.
Let me ask you another Diamondback question because you mentioned the two pitchers who have been rumored to be going. I'm seeing more that teams are more interested in Kelly. He's a nice pitcher. He's a good pitcher. Zach Gallen, when he's on the top of his game, Cy Young level type pitcher. Why more interested? Are you hearing the same thing? More interest in Kelly than Gallen? Is it because of the asking price?
I've heard different things here, and probably that is true. But Gallen's just, man, it's been bad this year. I mean, if we're talking about a 5.58 ERA, and when you look at, you know, we would talk so much about Alcantara and what are they going to do? At some point, if these guys, like when you're talking about rental pieces, you just don't have time, or not even rental pieces, just guys that you need to help you this year. You know, obviously, Gallen, we've seen the upside with him, but if teams are trying to kind of fix these guys, if it doesn't get fixed within really a month or two, there's not really any chance. You look at the underlying numbers for Gallen, that doesn't paint a pretty picture either. He's just a lot of hard contact against him so far this year. Now, granted, yes, when you've seen the upside, what he can do when he's right, he's still only 29. I think, yeah, the upside, if you can tap back into that, is probably higher. But that's a really high ERA, and that has to scare teams off when you're only getting these guys for a couple more months versus Kelly, who at least has been, you know, a steadier piece this year.
All right. Both of the New York teams made trades today. I mentioned Ryan McMahon going to the Yankees for a couple of fairly highly rated minor league arms. Not top prospect, but good solid prospects. McMahon's going to go immediately to third base. They'll move Chisholm over to second base. Third base has been a issue or a problem all year for the Yankees. McMahon's having a good power season, but he's been below 220 in Colorado, where usually power and averages go up. Is he going to be the answer at third base for the Bombers?
Yeah, I mean, you said it. I think there's no question he's an upgrade, and there's also no question that really of any position of any team, the Yankees had to fix third base. They had Yorby Vivas and Oswald Peraza, who had a 48 OPS plus and a 25 OPS plus. So you're talking about two guys who are more than 50% worse than the league average as hitters. They needed to fix that in some way. I know McMahon's been a slightly below league average hitter, but he's a significant upgrade over what they had, and he's a really good defensive glove. You're talking about when you're looking at some of the advanced stats defensively, in terms of outs above average over the last 5 years, each of the last 5 years, he's ranked in the top six among defensive third basemen. So you know he's going to be a stout glove there. Now, how much offense do you get? That's a question. I mean, he is a pull guy, and you like that as a left-handed hitter in New York. But, you know, I think you're just going to be looking at whatever happens here with Gino Suarez. If he's hitting 10, 20 more home runs for another team somewhere else, it's going to be painful if McMahon doesn't give you that. Now, he does have some pop. You know, he does have 16 home runs this year. I think that's sixth among third basemen. So I think it's a clear upgrade. I thought that was going to be the match. There's just not a ton of third basemen out there available. And if it wasn't going to be Suarez, McMahon made a ton of sense. And you're going to be able to get McMahon for less than you would have for Suarez. And you have McMahon for two more years on a reasonable contract. So makes sense. Yeah, it's not going to, you know, he's not going to knock your socks off offensively, but he's fine there and a plus defensively.
All right, and the Mets added a bullpen arm today, getting Gregory Soto from the Orioles. Now, I saw Soto pitch for the Phillies in 23, and he was solid. He actually saved a couple of games. He'd been very good, been a closer in Detroit, but he was an okay middle innings piece for the Phillies, and then they gave him up midseason last year, traded him to Baltimore. Hasn't been really all that good for the Orioles. Wasn't great in the second year for the Phillies. Why did the Mets think that Gregory Soto will be able to turn back the clock and get to his Tiger-level achievement with this deal?
Yeah, he's been a lot better at eliminating hard contact so far, and really they just needed a left-handed pitcher to be available there before Diaz. I think this is a team that tends to be able to, and I trust, you know, David Stearns with this, tends to be able to get the most out of his pitchers. Soto has the swing and miss stuff. He's been able to avoid barrels. I think he could be a really solid, you know, 7-8 inning guy. And again, they needed a left-hander. He made a lot of sense. You know, the team he's coming from is open for business, so that also made sense as a match. And I would imagine they'll probably do a little bit more in the bullpen too. I mean, it's crazy that we're talking about the Mets still having the best ERA in the National League so far, despite all the injuries. Now, it has regressed over the last month. I think you're seeing some, you know, diversion to the mean a little bit here, and maybe what they were doing early on is a little bit beyond what you can expect going forward. But I mean, he's a solid piece, and I think they don't need a closer. Obviously, they need some guys for those middle innings, and I expect they'll do a little bit more there.
Rowan Kavner from FoxSports.com talking MLB trade deadline with me here, and just the week since the All-Star game has come and gone. I do want to ask you about a couple specific teams there. But first thing first, on you mentioning the Diamondbacks, probably the team that could do the most as far as selling off goes and maybe fill some holes from some other teams. If not Arizona, I would say the Twins are the team that in the American League could probably help some teams. They've got some talented players. They should be sellers. They haven't sold yet. How big a deal do you think Minnesota could be upgrading teams if they go into full sell mode?
Yeah, man, there's about 8 to 10 teams here that I'm just super interested in that probably still are kind of just sort of hovering the line. And Minnesota, for sure, when you have Jackson Duran at the back end, that's a really tempting tandem. If you're Cleveland, and I know they're probably maybe even less likely with, you know, Clase and Cade Smith, but I think that's what you're looking at. You're looking at these back-end bullpen pieces, and a lot of them tend to come from these teams who are kind of hovering somewhere in between, and a lot of them also aren't rentals. So that's kind of the big deal here. Could you see Helsley go also? We see Felix Bautista's hurt, so that's kind of out of the mix, but I could see Bednar going from the Pirates. So, yeah, I mean, Minnesota for sure. And look, if Joe Ryan becomes available, I'd still be really surprised if he gets moved. But that is a really, really underrated starting pitcher, the kind of, real difference-making guy for a team that needs somebody in the playoffs. It's going to cost a lot, though. I could see Willie Castro getting moved. I think he's another underrated piece, especially with a lot of these teams that, you know, you could kind of maybe need help at multiple spots. He's someone who can move around. It's a rental piece. I could definitely see him getting moved for sure.
All right. You're a West Coast guy, so let me ask you about a couple of West Coast teams. Angels first. I just saw them come in Philly, here in the Philly, and got the better of the Phils for a couple of games, but then they went to New York and got swept. By mathematics in the standings, I would suggest they're still in a wild card race. Too many games played to just say they have no chance, but under Artie Moreno, they've never sold. If they lose their next two or three in a row and they are more legitimately buried, are they going to sell? And if so, who could be had from that team that could be a difference maker, who could be acquired in your eyes?
Yeah, I don't know that anyone knows what's going through Artie Moreno's mind sometimes. And I would not be buyers if I were them. But I also, I mean, we've seen this, as you said, too many times to think that even if conventional logic would say to sell, I think if they have any sort of chance, they tend to either kind of stand pat or try to go get it. And usually you'd say, hey, that's a good thing. At least your team's kind of competing. But man, it's happened too many times now where they've had opportunities to really bolster a farm system that so badly needs more pieces. I can't look at that team right now and think that's a team that's really going to make noise. They're five games under 500. 11 games back in the division, over 5 games out of the wild card. I would sell. Will they do that? I mean, maybe you get a little bit of both. I mean, Tyler Anderson isn't going to, you know, wow anybody, but that's a piece that definitely could get traded, a rental piece. Kenley Jansen could still help a bullpen somewhere. Would they be willing to trade Taylor Ward? I think that's a piece that could maybe get you a lot back, especially with teams in need of corner outfield help and the power that he can provide. I would sell these guys. I would do that. I would go try to rebuild this thing. I'd be shocked if they're competing for anything this year. Now, will they do that? Your guess is as good as mine there.
Yeah, Taylor Ward came in, hit a couple home runs against the Phillies, and me and a whole bunch of other guys in Philadelphia say, there's the left fielder the Phillies need to
absolutely
go out and get.
Yeah.
Don't know if he becomes available. All right, also on your coast, A.J. Preller is one of the most aggressive general managers and has been for the better part of a decade here. And his Padres are right there in the playoff mix. Actually, with the Dodgers getting off to a slow start in the second half, they've closed the gap between themselves and the Dodgers. They seem to have a left field problem. How is A.J. Preller going to handle the deadline? Can he fix whatever issues he has with his aggressive stance?
It is amazing that no matter how many prospects they lose, you can rank them wherever in the farm system rankings, and somehow he finds a way to kind of maneuver things, finagle things, where he's in the mix for somebody. And I have a really, they've just been so quiet so far this year. I find it really hard to believe that Preller could sit out of a deadline, especially as you said, they need offensive depth, lineup depth so bad right now. And yes, left field is definitely the glaring spot, but really anywhere. They need a bat. They could put him at DH, at first base, somewhere like that. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking at left field and could they be in the mix for a Jaron Duran? There's been rumors, would they be able to trade from people on their big league roster? Could Dylan Cease get moved to be able to add more offensive depth on that team? They need to find a way. I trust that somehow Preller will find a way. Could they be involved for Luis Robert Jr.? Is it something maybe a little bit smaller for Mullins or Laureano in Baltimore? I think all of those things would definitely make sense. I think the big blockbuster, if they could go get Duran from Boston just with their logjam in the outfield, that would be really, really interesting. I just can't imagine Preller stays quiet through this.
Fair enough. All right, one more team and then an overall question. The Tigers have now lost 10 of 11. They lost a couple before the All-Star break. All right, no big deal. They had a bad series. Well, they just continue to lose afterwards, so it's 10 of 11 in the loss column. Their lead in that division has shrunk from well above double digits into single digits. How does Detroit handle their business over the next 5 days? Do they need to make a deal just to shake it up and try and bring this losing streak to a halt?
Yeah, I mean, luckily they've built such an advantage in the AL Central that I don't think they, as bad as it's been, I don't think they have to worry about winning the division. But yeah, I think when you're looking kind of bigger picture at this roster, it's really funny when you think about what they did last year and all that pitching chaos, and it seemed like they had, you know, some sort of reliever or bullpen piece that they could just kind of pull out of nowhere and turn into something. I really think they need more bullpen help, and the offense has definitely been worse lately, and I think that can happen when you think about how they've gotten here and all the resurgent years that they've had from everybody, from Javi Baez and Torkelson and Gleyber Torres and Zach McKinstry and all these guys that are all-star players that have really turned it around. I don't know that you can just bank on that all year, so they could kind of go a lot of directions offensively, but I really think, yeah, if nothing else, they need to add more bullpen help. I think a guy like Griffin Jacks from Minnesota, you mentioned the Twins, that wouldn't surprise me at all. But they could really use a closer, and even if it's not a closer, a late-inning guy, because the bullpen has really, really struggled in July. We had some blown saves mixed up in there. They're not great in terms of missing bats, so a strikeout guy like Jacks would make sense. But I'd expect them to add some bullpen help at the least.
All right, Rowan, last thing. I know that there is no salary cap in baseball. There is in the NFL, NBA, NHL. But the competitive balance tax, a.k.a. the luxury tax, can have an effect on how teams do roster building both before the year. How about during the year? How much of a factor is a team trying to stay below, or a team getting below, or a team willing to spend and jump above? How much will the competitive balance tax play leading into the trade deadline?
I think it matters a lot. Yeah, I think it's still very much a factor, and I think teams then have to kind of weigh, is this really the year you kind of put your chips in and you don't worry about it? Now, it's easier for the general manager or the president of baseball operations to say that. It's harder maybe to convince ownership of that. But I do think that's definitely at play. So far, the teams that we've seen active, the Mariners and the Yankees, you could argue were the two teams that really needed to do something to fix the issues that they have in certain places. And they have fixed the issues that they've had in certain places. I could see both teams continuing to push a little bit more in, but I think those are the two teams in the AL that really stood out. I'm really curious to see, and speaking of teams that are very budget conscious, what the Houston Astros do here, because there's a lot of directions they can go when they have 17 guys on the injured list, and that yet they still just continue to find ways to win, continue to find ways to kind of keep that dynasty going. They could use some pitching help, although some of those guys are coming back in the second half. They could use infield help. That Paredes is on the injured list now. I mentioned Willie Castro. I think that would be an interesting piece for them. But again, a team that also, yeah, there is budget conscious. And then in the National League, everyone was waiting for, you know, Gino Suarez, the Yankees. That made a lot of sense. They so bad should just go get that guy. Because that team, I mean, they have the best record in baseball, a bottom 10 payroll. It's not probably going to happen. But it just makes so much sense to me to put that guy. They need another power threat. Yes, they can get through the you know, the gauntlet of a season with what they have. It's remarkable what they're able to do from a pitching perspective. But to go get that guy, I mean, Arizona needs pitching help. They have more pitchers than they can do with. A lot of these guys who should be, you know, would be in any big league rotation are sitting there in AAA because they're just so good at what they're able to do there. Go get that guy. Go make it. Go find a difference maker in the middle of the lineup. The Brewers and the Cubs, to me, are the two teams now that we're kind of waiting on that really have a chance to go separate by doing something.
That is going to be a great battle in that division, I think, all the way till the last week of September. Rowan, great stuff. Know you're going to be busy the next 5 days, my friend. I'll be checking you out on foxsports.com. Thanks for jumping on with me tonight.
All right, man. See ya.
Rowan Kapner from FoxSports.com, outstanding Major League Baseball writer here with me on the Infinity Sports Network. Jay Mack filling in for JR, Sport Brief here on Infinity Sports Network. Let's get back on the phones. Baseball or football, what it is that you want to talk about? 888-710-4476.
Ready to take the next step in your career? The Bryan School of Business and Economics at UNC Greensboro offers a range of affordable, fully online undergraduate programs designed to prepare you for in-demand business roles. With flexible courses, dedicated faculty, and a strong return on investment, it's a smart choice for your future. Develop the skills employers want and gain the confidence to stand out in today's competitive job market. Apply now to start in the fall. Visit bryan.uncg.edu.
You're listening to the JR Sport Brief.
It is the JR Sport Brief show, but JR's got the night off. Jody Mack in his stead, trying to use the telephone lines, give you guys a chance to chime in on baseball, trade deadline, games being played tonight. You tell me. NFL season just 6 days from getting underway. I actually think that the first day, wherever it shows up for camp, the Lions and the Chargers got a jump start, head start, because they're playing in the Hall of Fame game, which is 6 days from now, 6 nights from now, next Thursday, big day in sports. The MLB trade deadline, 6 o'clock that night, the Hall of Fame game, the NFL on field, in game, gets its season underway. But, oh, by the way, all teams are practicing, and we're getting stories breaking, and we're hearing about injuries yesterday. Justin Fields, a little bit scary. Apparently not as dire as some people, yours truly included, feared it would be. But the NFL season is right around the corner. So those are the two top sports stories. I punched up my buddy Brian Geltzeiler to do an NBA spot with me. But the NBA is, they got a couple of free agents. He gave you some good insight as to Jonathan Kuminga. Can't believe that the Nets aren't involved to try and pull off a sign and trade. A couple teams have reached out to the Warriors, but they have not gotten anything done. So there are a couple of good players still out there, restricted free agents that haven't been able to come to contract agreement yet. So if you want to go NBA, we can. I did promise you that I would give you my insight for the big horse race coming up tomorrow. Saratoga, sorry to my Cali friends, Del Mar's an outstanding meet. It's not Saratoga. The best sports racing, horse racing meet of the year is the 2 weeks they spent up in Saratoga. And the biggest race of the entire meet is the Traverse. It is the Midsummer Classic. After the three Triple Crown races, it's the biggest race for three-year-olds in the country. Prior to the Traverse, which is still 4 weeks away, the prep at Saratoga is the Jim Dandy Stakes. Not a bad prep race where you're racing for $500,000. The winner gets 60%, so $300,000 to the winner. Still a $500,000 race. And it's only a prep race, not a grade one race. That is the lead into Saratoga 4 weeks down the road. And Sovereignty, your Kentucky Derby and Belmont winner, is returning to the track in the Jim Dandy. Thought this was going to be his schedule going forward after he won the Belmont. Thought that he'd stay off till the Jim Dandy. Bill Mott, New York trainer, if ever there was one, wasn't going to go searching for a race. He was going to take his horse up to Saratoga to work him out to get him ready. He goes in the Dandy tomorrow against only four other horses. So it'll be an exciting race because it's the return of Sovereignty, but he only has four horses that are going to take him on. Morning line, he's 3-5. Which means you'd have to put up $5 just to win three. That is not a good wagering aspect. He's supposed to win. He's probably going to win. Journalism was a below 1-1 favorite in the Haskell a couple of weeks ago, and he won, but he didn't get up till the final strides, won by a half a length, came from way off to win it. Sovereignty needs to win this so we get the showdown, the rematch between Journalism and Sovereignty in the Travers 4 weeks down the road. four horses that'll go tomorrow. Baez's run third in both the against Sovereignty in both the Kentucky Derby and in the Belmont Stakes. Sandman has been a good hard fighter all year long. One is prepped down in Arkansas, but has flattened off since, but is a quality stakes graded 3 year old who, if everything goes right, I guess could pull the upset. Hill Road finished third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile last year, has been trying to fight to get back to that level. All this 3 year old campaign hasn't been able to do it. And if you were playing the race, and it's only a 5-horse field, so you can't even an exacta is a bit of a stretch. I would probably put Moplex, the Ohio Derby winner, who is a late-developing 3-year-old underneath Sovereignty, in a 5-horse field, even though Moplex will probably be the fourth choice behind Sovereignty, Sandman, and Baeza. You're still only going to get a, for $2, a $12, a $14 exact. That's not terrible, but that's not something you're sending your kids off to college with. But you know I'm a horse racing fan. You know I'll be tuned. The Jim Danny will go off before I hit the airwaves tomorrow in my usual Saturday shift. We'll talk about it a little bit more tomorrow night. Or if you want to get on and talk about it right here, right now, we can. I got the phones open the rest of the hour. Got one more guest in my fourth and final hour tonight. But if you want to come in and make a baseball or football comment or ask a baseball or football question, get on the phone lines now. I'll take calls at the top of the hour. 888-710-4476. Return to the lines at the latest Infinity Sports Flash. We're Richard Ackerman.
From your fryer to the table, it's a quick trip for crispy fries. But how about a crosstown delivery? McCain SureCrisp fries are designed to go from fryer to container to carrier to passenger seat across town during rush hour down a shortcut that wasn't all that short to a doorstep before they hit the table. And that first bite, the crispiness speaks for itself.
Mmm.
To the last bite, McCain SureCrisp fries go the distance. See how far our fries can take your business at surecrisp.com/delivery. From your fryer to the table, it's a quick trip for crispy fries. But how about a crosstown delivery? McCain SureCrisp fries are designed to go from fryer to container to carrier to passenger seat across town during rush hour down a shortcut that wasn't all that short to a doorstep before they hit the table. And that first bite, the crispiness speaks for itself.
Mmm.
To the last bite, McCain SureCrisp fries go the distance. See how far our fries can take your business at surecrisp.com/delivery.
You're listening to the JR Sport Brief.
Jody Mackin for JR on this Friday night hang. Got some ongoing baseball. We'll keep you abreast of. No more trades since the show started. Mets made a trade today. Yankees made a trade today. Mariners made a trade last night. Josh Naylor, pretty big addition for Seattle. We'll see what Ryan McMahon could do at third base for the Yankees. Not in the lineup tonight. Could be there tomorrow, though. And the Mets got Sosa, an okay reliever, who has spent the last couple of years in both Baltimore and Philadelphia. Wasn't nearly as good in either of those two stops as he was in Detroit. But the Yankees desperately needed a left-handed, the Mets desperately needed a left-handed arm in the pen, so they reached out and got a guy they needed. You want to talk about any of the teams, any of the abilities to get deals done over the last, now count it, 6 days? That's all we got left till the trade deadline. You can jump in. NFL underway, camps open. Big game next week. It always is because it's the first game. Hall of Fame, Lions against the Chargers. And I said this earlier in the show, and it's worth repeating. Detroit fans, you want to check in, 888-710-4476. I saw two articles over the last 2 days. ESPN had one of them. I forget where the other one was. Both of them suggesting that the Lions have missed their opportunity. that they had the best record in football last in the National Football Conference last year. The road to the Super Bowl was supposed to run through Detroit. They got picked off by the Commanders. And then they lost their two defensive coordinators, Johnson going to take over the Cubs, and Aaron Glenn, the new head coach of the Jets. And that the loss of those two coordinators has shut the door for the Lions to potentially make it to a Super Bowl and maybe win a championship. I don't believe that. I don't see that. We'll find out how much of an offensive genius Ben Johnson is in Chicago, what he adds to that offense. They should get better just because they should get better. We'll see if it's all because of Ben Johnson. I think the Lions are still a legit contender. I think the Eagles and the Lions are still the top two teams in the NFC. They were last year. I know Lions didn't play in a championship game. They should have got picked off by the Commanders. If the Commanders make it back to a championship game this year, I'd be a little bit surprised. I still think the Lions are a better team than Washington. I think they're better than their other tough competition. Now, not a piece of cake to be playing in the NFC Central North, but I still think the Lions are except for the Eagles, the team to beat in the NFC. You want to talk about the upcoming NFL season? We can surely do that. Hit me up. 888-710-4476. Got a couple calls to talk to, starting with Todd from Maryland. Hello, Todd.
Hey, Tony Mac. How you doing, bud?
Good. You?
No complaints. No complaints.
Nice. Good.
Got a couple questions for you, Tony, real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you and I have been through this year, probably been about a year or two. But when you win three in a row, three championships in a row, it's called what?
A three-peat.
Yeah, there's another name for it. Anyway, Oakland
A's,
other
than a three-peat, three straight?
Yes.
Championships called something other than a three-peat?
Yes.
I, off the top of my head, I don't know any other phrase that has been often stated to describe it. Three-peat is the best one. Pat Riley, when the Lakers did it, was the guy who decided to put a patent on it so that nobody else could use it without paying him royalties, give him credit for it because he saw that it was the best way to describe three straight championships and has been making money on it ever since.
Yeah, you know, I never realized the Lakers did it way back when.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be doing okay, Oakland A's, right? Reggie Jackson, Campanaris, Joe Rudy, those guys, right? Cassius Hunter, right?
Mm-hmm.
A's, okay. Chicago Blackhawks, correct?
Did the Blackhawks win 1990s?
Yeah, 1990s they did.
I didn't know it was three in a row. I thought it might have been three out of four. But I'll take your word for it.
Okay. New York Yankees, three in a row, right?
Oh, yeah. The core four with Jeter and Posada and Pettit and Bernie Williams. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And now, is there any more that you know of?
Off the top of my head, well, I think the Packers way back when – before the Super Bowl ever started with
the
NFL. Packers won
three in a row. Yeah, right.
The Canadians, I know, won three in a row sometime in the 60s. I think they won five in a row, as a matter of fact. So three in a row.
You know what? Go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry, Joe. Yeah,
that's okay.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying, if you win five in a row, that is three in a row plus. That's a three-peat plus. And it's almost a double three-peat.
Yeah, I'm with you. Now, listen. You know, it wasn't the Chicago Blackhawks. It was the Canadians.
That's what I thought. I didn't think the Blackhawks ever won three in a row.
Right. Okay, boy.
So the Canadians might have done it. They might have had two separate three-peats, as a matter of fact. I'm going to try and really quickly look this up and see if I can find it. Seasons. Florida Panthers are going for the three-peat this year. Tampa had won back-to-back. Penguins had won back-to-back. This decade, no others. Red Wings in 97-98 won back-to-back but couldn't get the third in a row. Oh, of course, the Islanders got three in a row. They got four in a row. I should. How do I not say that? I'm growing up in New York at the time. Annoyed the snot out of me as a Ranger fan growing up. 80, 81, 82, 83. Islanders won four in a row. Where are the Quebec Nordiques? Montreal Canadiens only got two in the 60s. 65, six, then they got two again, 64, 65. Canadiens, Cup championship teams, 65, 66, 68, 69. The Toronto Maple Leafs won in between, beat the Montreal Canadiens, so they were in the Stanley Cup final four straight years. Maple Leafs won three in a row, 62, 63, 64. And yeah, here's the Canadian team that I told you about. 56, 57, 58, 59, 60. I was right. The Montreal Canadiens won five consecutive championships. And the 2 years prior to, they lost the NHL Stanley Cup final to the Detroit Red Wings. So, oh, Red Wings once and Maple Leafs once. So, yeah, that no, Red Wings twice. Canadians won the year before that. Red Wings beat the Canadiens. It was Canadians and the Red Wings, basically, in the Stanley Cup final every single year, if we're talking three-peats. Mitch from Jersey's up on the Infinity Sports Network. Hey, Mitch.
How you doing, Jody?
Good, you?
Did you mention the Boston Celtics? I mean,
didn't even go there. We hadn't gotten to the NBA yet. We were just going through NHL teams and NFL teams. We hadn't gotten to the NBA.
As much as a three-peat
team ever. Yep.
Definitely. And it's very hard doing football. I mean, Mr. Mahomes blew it big time. You can guess what I want to talk about. First, the Dodgers, I wish they had gotten Josh Naylor. He could be free agent in a year. He played left field. He got a good bat. He's still young. You know, the Chargers parted, made a mistake, let him go. I wish they had traded for him. Pays has had a good year, so he's been a pleasant surprise. But Betts doesn't belong in shortstop. And Muncy's, Muncy is injured. He's going to be out for a while. He had a good month, a real good month. And Conforto, you can take him back.
Yeah, Conforto has been a major disappointment for the Dodgers this year.
Even with the Giants, too. I mean, they could use a hitter.
Right. So, hasn't been as good as his days with the Mets. You are correct.
And with football, I guess if it's NFL training camps or whatever, I guess I'm assuming the Big Ten is open up right around the corner. And I got to say, USC, I think USC is going to win 10 games this year. They've really stuck up both sides of the ball. And even next year, they have number one Congress in 2026. What do you think? And I think Lincoln Riley is feeling his yields there.
You know, I've always been a Lincoln Riley fan. I think he's one of the best coaches in college football. But now that they're playing 12 games, and if you get to the playoffs and if you win 10 in the regular season, you may or may not get into the playoffs. That's depends on who's got a more impressive 10-2 team record. Yeah, that's a good conference. You go 10-2. You're in the conversation, not a lock. But if you want to lock a playoff spot, you need to go 12-0 or 11-1. And I don't think that USC's got that in them. But 10-2 gets them into the conversation for a playoff spot.
And I do want them to keep the Notre Dame game. Right now, this might be the last game. So,
last game for, what do you mean, those two teams playing each other?
Yeah, they're still debating.
Could be, but they work their way around. When you got 12 games, you can work your way around basically almost anything. And don't kid yourself, college football, as much as the NFL, as much as any other sport, they're a slave to TV as well. And if somebody wants to pay for the Notre Dame game to continue on, they won't get rid of it. They'll find a way to continue to have that game between Notre Dame and USC. And, yes, holy mackerel, I forgot. Shame on me. Teams that have three-peated in the NBA are aplenty. Mitch went way back to the 60s for the Boston Celtics. I went back to the Kobe Shaq Lakers. They were the last team to do it, 2000, 2001, 2002. And then there was this team, maybe you've heard them, They play in the middle of the country, that windy city called Chicago. Michael Jordan and the Bulls won 3 in a row. Michael decided to retire. He came back, but not at 100% while he was gone. The Houston Rockets won 2 in a row. And then Michael got back up to speed again. And his Chicago Bulls, led by himself, Phil Jackson, Scottie Pippen, et al., won 3 in a row. So it's happened much more often in the NBA than it has in any other sport. How many did the Celtics get? Let me get to the Celtics in the 60s. They won. First time was 56-57. Then the St. Louis Hawks got them. 59-60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 65, 66. That would be seven straight championships. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Oh, excuse me. 8 straight championships. Yeah, that's a three-peat. That's a three-peat times two plus leftovers. So, yes, back in the day before free agency, before salary caps, before a lot of things changed in the game, it was certainly easier. You could put together a team and you could keep a team together like the Boston Celtics did for as long as they did and, yes, become one of the most epic teams in the history of sports, which the Celtics are. So the Eagles are going for a repeat. There is no three-peat on the line in the NFL this year. If they get back to the Super Bowl, be a pretty big accomplishment, having gone to 3 of 4. I think they need to go to the Super Bowl. If they win the Super Bowl, then yes, this current Jalen Hurts-led football team, Nick Sirianni-led football team, will be a dynasty. The Patriots were a certain dynasty. Depending on how you want to break it up or define a dynasty, you can make a case that the Patriots had a minimum of 2 dynasties, if not 3 dynasties. The Kansas City Chiefs over the last several years, back-to-back, as many Super Bowls as they've been part of, also, in my mind, an unquestioned dynasty. But a dynasty could be, and if I said this on Philadelphia radio, the Eagle fans would love me, and I'm, oh, by the way, going to be on Philadelphia radio tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. I may go down this road. The Eagles have had a couple of key individuals, Coach Sirianni being one, Jalen Hurts being another, and their star left tackle, Jordan Mailata, getting a little too protective of this upcoming season. Sirianni came out and said, don't anybody use the word repeat around here. We're not trying to repeat. We're trying to do continued excellence. That he doesn't like the use of the word repeat, continued success. You're going for a repeat. Whether you like it or not, Coach, that's what it is. Jalen Hurts has refused to wear his Super Bowl ring. The Eagles, by the way, if you haven't seen a picture of it, Google it. It's so over the top. There's a competition going on from year to year now. Who can make the most audacious, outrageous, over-the-top ring? Oh, the Eagles got one this year. Hurts won't put it on because that season has passed. He's only thinking about going forward. And Jordan Mailata said the same exact thing. Yeah. They're not defending anything. The championship has been won, but they're not defending anything. They're going for a repeat. They're the defending champions. And Jalen, go ahead and put that ring on. Otherwise, people think you dost protest too much.
From your fryer to the table, it's a quick trip for crispy fries. But how about a crosstown delivery? McCain SureCrisp fries are designed to go from fryer to container to carrier to passenger seat across town during rush hour down a shortcut that wasn't all that short to a doorstep before they hit the table. And that first bite, the crispiness speaks for itself.
Mmm.
To the last bite, McCain SureCrisp fries go the distance. See how far our fries can take your business at surecrisp.com/delivery.